Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Accomplish Radio Show. I'm your host, Darlene Willman, the publisher of Accomplish Magazine, and wanting to remind you to make sure you pick up your free subscription of Accomplish Magazine, because you'll be seeing lots of incredible people that we have interviewed on Accomplish Radio. And today's guest is just phenomenal. I can't wait for you to get a chance to know who this person is. And if this is your first time joining us on the Accomplish Radio Show, we're really glad you found us. In fact, we're celebrating over 16,000 listeners that have been tuning in each weekday. And if you'd like to listen to our show again or tell your friends about us and want to listen to this interview, you can hear our rebroadcast, which will be available all day at AccomplishMagazine.com. It's also available in iTunes, so you can pick up this whole MP3 file and take it with you on your iPod. And I'd like to also encourage everyone to join us on Facebook. We've got a brand new fan page that just went out, so we hope that people will look us up there as well. And as you know, when we broadcast our shows each day, you know, we bring to you people from all over the world that have accomplished a lot of things that some of us are still learning the ropes. You know, today's guest is going to be sharing things on likability. In fact, the whole month of February, we're bringing you guests that are experts on relationships. Today's guest, his name is Bob Summers, and he's also known as the likability guy. He moved to Maui 15 years ago with his family. Bob has built and ran a customer service company in America, a very large company. It was Summers Communication, and his company presented thousands of workshops every year in virtually every community in the country. And today he hosts the Recognized Expert Marketing Show, and he's the president of the Internet Marketing Association of Hawaii, and he's a sought-after speaker on the subject of likability and plays a huge role in, you know, your health, wealth, and happiness. We're really excited to have him as a guest on our show, so I'd like to go ahead and welcome Bob Summers.
Hey, Darlene, thank you. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm actually a little nervous, you know, interviewing you today because you've done, what, over 200 interviews yourself. And I know you had me on your show. It's been a couple of years ago. But what an honor and a privilege to finally be the one to interview you.
Well, thank you. I'm listening to your introduction thinking, oh, my goodness, if I could redo those 200 shows, I would learn what I just learned from you and redo those shows properly. So thank you for teaching me a great little lesson on how to start a show. That was great.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, I want to say, first of all, congratulations on all your accomplishments that you've had. You know, I know that you've done just some incredible things and changed a lot of people's lives, especially, you know, having your company out there. And I'd like to ask you, first of all, why did you decide to start branding yourself as the likability guy?
Well, thank you, darling. That's a great question, actually. And, you know, the truth of the matter is I didn't brand myself as the likability guy. What was happening is as I was speaking on this subject and talking about it, you know, don't you find that whenever you talk to people, you tend to have certain topics you just love to talk about. And people kind of hook you with whatever that thing you're fanatic is about. And mine just happened to be likability. I talk about it all the time. So people, believe me, they do not call me the likability guy because I'm the most likable person in the world. I actually have a spouse and my own personal IRS agent that will attest to that. I am not the most likable guy in the world. I'm only called that because it's the subject matter that I'm just fascinated with. And, you know, that all really started, oh, my gosh, probably when I was in college. I remember when I was a freshman, I was an engineer, or at least that's what I was hoping to be, and I took a class on engineering management. And it was the only course I took that wasn't mathematically inclined. And engineering management, I found that so interesting. We were going to learn how to manage engineers, not actual people, of course, just engineers. So the whole thing in that program was based on Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And that was the first time I read that book, and I've probably read it, Darlene, I'll bet you, at least a dozen times since then. And by the way, did you know that that book is still one of the top 100 best-selling business books on Amazon.com, even today, after almost 80 years after that, you know, Missouri farmer wrote the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
That's
so
amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So the likability guy, you know, just kind of came along with what I do. I'm just actually glad I'm not a proctologist. Can you imagine the the moniker that would come along with that? So, anyhow.
No, that's great. And you know what? I have to actually contribute something here that I think you are the world's most likable guy.
Well,
you know, getting a chance to see you in action and up on stage and perform, you know, you were one of my guest speakers at one of my large events one time, and everybody had such great things, you know, to say about you. And, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, those people that know Bob Summers said, oh, what a great, likable guy.
Well, that's nice, Darlene. Thank you for that. Thank you.
Well, let's talk for a minute about your background, because, you know, it's always interesting to me to find out from our guests how they got started. And, you know, a lot of times it's about when did you discover that you were an entrepreneur. And, you know, I'd like to hear when that all happened for you. What got you started in this?
Well, thank you. Interestingly, when I was growing up, my dad worked as a commission salesperson. And he'd given me a lot of advice, you know, and I'll probably cover some of those in the time we have together. But one of his greatest pieces of advice was, don't ever go to work for somebody because they'll never pay you what you're worth. And that was interesting. And my dad never worked for anyone. He was always a commission-based salesperson. Not that he had his own business, but he always worked strictly on commission. He just refused to take salary jobs, and he did very, very well for himself. And he just drummed that into all of my siblings. So I knew immediately when I graduated from school that I was never going to work on a salary. And my first job out of engineering school was with a Trane air conditioning company, and it was a commissioned sales job selling commercial air conditioning equipment, and that was in Atlanta. And after about 2 years of doing it, I loved the selling part. I loved meeting people. I just had the best time and did really, really well with those guys. And on one June morning, my sales manager came in, and he said, Bob, I have good news for you and I have bad news. And he said, the good news is really, really good, and the bad news may or may not be bad news. And I said, well, what's the bad news? He said, you're fired. I go, oh, my God, you're kidding me. I'm fired? I mean, I can't imagine you're going to follow up with any good news here. And he said, well, first of all, you're not really fired, but I want to give you an opportunity to get out of this profession. You're really good at it, but you know what? Your heart is not in the technology side, in the engineering side. This isn't what you're meant to be doing. He said, have you not noticed that everybody else you work around are complete geeks, including me? And I go, well, you know, I had kind of noticed that. He said, you don't fit in. He said, you need to do something on your own, and you need to run as far and as fast from engineering as you can because it's not you. And he was right. So he said, here's the deal. For the next 2 weeks, if you choose to leave, for the next 2 weeks, what I want to do is I'm going to set you up with people who are in the industry that you choose, that you think you'd like to do. So the first thing he did is he gave me a telephone book from Miami, of all places, and he said, I want you to go through this tonight. And this guy turned out to be just a great friend and mentor. I want you to go through this phone book and circle all the things you think would be really cool to do, excluding the money. I mean, pretend everybody, whatever job you pick, you're going to earn $1 million. It doesn't matter. Just circle it strictly based on enjoyment. So I went home that night, Darlene, and I circled like 50 things, riding on the back of a trash truck. Oh, that would be fun. An oceanographer. You know, all these things, a home builder, all these things I thought would be really cool. Well, he looked at them the next day, and he said, okay, now what I want you to do today is I want you to cross off 40 of those and come down to 10 things. Well, that was kind of hard because, you know, I liked all 50 of these things. But after I saw those 10, I was like, those 10 are what I want to do. Then the next night he said, now I want you to get it down to 3. Mm-hmm. And, wow, that was hard. But when I came up with those 3, I thought, boy, I would be absolutely ecstatic doing any one of these 3 things. And they just happen to be an oceanographer because I love the water, and that's one of the reasons I live on the water now, even though I never did that. The second one was to be a preacher, even though I had never seen a preacher live because I grew up Catholic, and I just saw these preachers on TV, and I thought, boy, that looks like fun, and they're conveying a great message of hope and love. That's really neat. And then I thought, well, what about being a professional speaker, you know, going into the business world and speaking and sharing those same wonderful, you know, message of getting along and, you know, customer service and sales and marketing and things that really help people connect. And then he said, okay, if you could only do one, what would it be? And I thought, I'd like to be a public speaker. So he set me up over the next couple of weeks with three really, really wonderful people in Atlanta, where I lived, who he knew, and he was connected. And he said, these are probably the three most well-known and highly paid speakers in Atlanta, and I'm going to pay for you to go to lunch with each of these folks, and I want you to sit down with them and ask them this one question, and that is, if you were me and you were starting from scratch, what would you do starting right now to get your career off the ground as quickly as possible? So, wow, I did that, and I met with just some wonderful folks, and they gave me that advice very openly, and which allowed me to just jumpstart my career by really going to the people that were the very best at what they did and having them tell me very open and honestly, this is what I would do. And because of that, we're very fortunate. I mean, Summers Communication went from just being me in late 1983 to... it turning out to be in 1993, just a decade later, the largest customer service training company in the country. So we were we were everywhere. And the neatest part of that was, you know, that was my thing. And I realized this is exactly what I need to be doing. I enjoyed the public speaking aspect, the whole, you know, the humor and the show and the anecdotes and the stories and, you know, and really watching people go through this emotional roller coaster ride during the presentation, but ultimately getting the message, you know, getting it that everything we do is based on our relationships with other people, whether they're spouses, children, customers, coworkers, everything. And the people that have figured out how to build those relationships in such a way that people want to help you, not that they're paid to help you or they're manipulated to help you, but that they want to see you succeed. They want to elevate you. You know, the folks that figure that out are the ones that just do extremely well. And, you know, I was fortunate enough in that when I first started getting into that business, I got it. I mean, I was hanging around with people that understood that principle. My family was like that. My dad, my mom, my siblings, they were all extremely likable people. So I had some really great role models. And what you find is when you start learning something, you want to teach it. And for the longest time, I thought I was a student and then a teacher. Well, as it turns out, and I think it's true with all of us, we're students, we're teachers, and then we jump into being a hypocrite because we don't always do what we know is the best thing to do. So that's a little humbling because when you're out there speaking on likability and you're doing things to change people's lives and you don't always do it yourself, it can be very demoralizing because you know you want to be that person, you know better, but we all drop the ball, and it's a matter of picking it up and getting back out there and re-enhancing those relationships. And and likability really sprung off of that. I could go on and on about this, but anyway, that's kind of how this all started, by the way.
What a gift. I tell you, what a gift for you to have someone fire you, you know. Really, that is just amazing. And then turn around and mentor you.
Isn't that amazing?
That is just priceless.
Well, think about where this guy's heart had to be. I mean, I'm sure he told his wife the night before, honey, I'm going to fire this guy. I like him. I'm going to fire him. He's earning more money than any salesman we've ever had up until this point in time. I'm going to fire him. And she's like, why are you going to fire him? Because I like this guy and I want to see him succeed in life, and this isn't the place.
No.
You know, I would have, you know, whenever I think about this, I'm like, wow, that guy, you know, he really, really cared. And when I'm confronted with tough situations, and as you are, you know, when we're looking out for the best interest of the people we're with, only good things happen. Only good things happen. So So anyway, it was a blessing, Darlene, and I was very fortunate that that happened. It's just unfortunate that somebody else, and if I regret anything, it's unfortunate that somebody else brought that to my attention, that I didn't have the wherewithal to stand up on my own and take the, you know, the those corporate hand or the golden handcuffs off and walk away myself. I think the one thing I really
struggle with that.
Oh my goodness, and you can see why. And you know, we both have a high respect for the people that can do that, that say, I'm not putting up with this any longer. Not that it's necessarily a bad thing, but this isn't my path, this isn't what I need to be doing, and I have the wherewithal to pack my bags and walk out of here. And the truth of the matter is we can do it at any time, we just choose not to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so anyhow.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about your famous presentation that you did with UPS. You know, I kind of want to hear a little bit more about that.
Now,
I've seen the video clip. It was awesome.
Oh, the Postal Service you're talking about.
Oh, the Postal Service. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
It's easy to get those two confused. You just don't want to do it in front of each other, you know. So,
yeah.
Because USPS and UPS. Although I've worked with both.
That could be bad.
Yeah. There's certain unforgivable sins, and that's one of them when you're with a Postal Service audience and you address them as UPS. Fortunately, I've never made that mistake. But they're both great organizations, you know, and they have completely different
reputations.
Thank you. They have completely different reputations about how they run their business, et cetera, et cetera. The Postal Service, though, was the most interesting, I think, of the two that we've worked with. And the Postal Service hired us. They put out a bid. I think it was, it's been 15 or 16 years ago now. But they were looking to completely transform their perception, their customer service. Because at the time, they were ranked second lowest in customer service by big organizations across America. The worst organization, who was only a hair behind the Postal Service, was, and this will come as no surprise, the Internal Revenue Service. People just didn't feel like the Internal Revenue Service cared. I can't imagine how that happened, but that's just what they thought. So the Postal Service said, we want to make a monumental transformation with the culture here. And they were very militaristic at the time. I mean, a lot of the people that went to work for the Postal Service in the 60s, 70s, 80s, even earlier than that, came out of the military. So they brought that culture there. So they went out and put out a bid to 50 companies to bid on this multi-million-dollar project. And we thought, well, you know, we'll put a bid in. We understand what's going on there. And then they boiled it down to three companies, Dale Carnegie being one of them, and they were pretty well known. I think Ken Blanchard's company was the second one, and then us, our little company, Summers Communication. Well, as it turned out, they eventually hired us, and we weren't the least expensive. And I remember asking the lady that eventually hired us, why did you hire Summers Communication to do this over everybody else? She said, there was no second choice. She said, you all understood our business so well that nobody else even came close to understanding what was going on. And, Darlene, I found that was one of the principles of really doing a great job with whatever customer you work in, is know their business so well that they think you've worked there for the last decade. So we did so much research with these folks. But anyway, as time went on, over the course of about a year and a half of us being out there every day, in literally, I guess, hundreds of different cities just with the Postal Service, we had a chance to be in front of about over 100,000 of their frontline retail clerks, et cetera. And we were teaching our stuff, which we were calling customer service at the time. The Postal Service was calling it customer service training. But the reality was it was nothing like customer service. It was really about likability. And what I mean by that is we were teaching these folks how to like their customers. Now, I know this sounds ridiculous. It sounds like, well, that's not customer service. Customer service is greeting, inquiring, thanking, making suggestions. Well, you know, yeah, we do all those things. But the reality is when our customers like us because we like them first, I mean, really, that's what it's about, they honor us. They want to help us help them get what they want. They give us the benefit of the doubt. They enjoy coming to see us. There's just so many positive things. And what had happened 2 years later, after we started this program, that study came out again. You know, how did these companies now rate with respect to you know, their customer service? And it was in the Fortune magazine. I think it was December, I don't know what the year was, 1995 or something. But there was a big article about how these different companies had improved, and Dole Pineapple had improved by this unbelievable 6% in customer service improvement. And they hadn't seen anything like it over the course of a year. No company had improved by 6%. It was amazing. But the real article under that article was the fact that the Postal Service had improved by 13%.
Wow.
And it was, I don't think anything even close has happened since. And the Postmaster General, Marvin Runyon at the time, had attributed to the fact that we had, you know, literally gone out into the, you know, his community in every city in the country, basically, and taught their folks, you know, these what we're calling, quote, customer service skills, which were really nothing more than, here are the principles and steps on things you can do to like your customers, and great things are going to happen in return, not only to you, but to your organization. And at the time, the media was just kind of hounding me. You know, what are you doing differently? How is it you're having these amazing results, you know, with the Postal Service and other people doing customer service training? You know, they're not seeing anything close to this. And I didn't realize it until, you know, a little later that we weren't doing customer service training. We were really teaching people this whole thing on likability. And anyway, since that time, which has been almost 15 years ago, virtually all of my time has been dedicated to studying what makes people likable, you know, and what are the benefits of being likable. And the benefits are humongous. They're absolutely astronomical. Likable people are not treated the same way. They're just not. You know, likable people have the benefit of the doubt always. Likable people, quite frankly, get paid more to do a job. They live longer. They're healthier. They're happier. There are so many benefits when we're likable people. And the interesting thing is, it's a conscious decision. We either make or don't make. We're going to be likable or we're not. And when we choose to be likable, there's actually a set of things we can do, just some very objective things that we can do when we're with other people that are not people-pleasing behaviors, not by a long shot, which, you know, we'll have a chance to talk about in a little bit, I hope, but things that just make you irresistibly likable to virtually anybody you're with. So it's pretty amazing. But have you noticed that when you ask me questions, I go on and on and on and on?
You know, I was just going to say, I'm like fascinated. I'm like hanging on every word you're saying. And I'm going, gosh, it's such a great storyteller. And,
oh,
you know,
well,
that's another
you.
Thing that makes people, you know, so attracted and drawn to someone who is likable. And I'm sure that kind of goes into some of the things that we're going to discuss. Because, you know, listening to you share and giving your story and how it relates to so many people, you can't help but, like, be drawn in and wanting to listen closer. And, you know, I want to get right into it because, you know, our show today is really about the 12 laws of likability that you've developed and you've put together. And, you know, I don't know if these are any particular order or are they – it
no,
doesn't really
no,
matter, does it?
Well, it's interesting. Some of the laws – well, let me – throw a couple of things out. Some of the laws of likability will inherently make sense as we talk about it. People go, oh, yeah, that makes sense, all sense in the world. Some, not so much. You're like, well, I don't really get that one. Others are completely contrary to what you currently believe. And that's what makes these so interesting. And also, when we look at likability, Darlene, one of the things that's really interesting is none of us are likable in a vacuum. If I'm just floating out in space, la, 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 and I'm not around any people, I'm not likable or I'm not unlikable. I'm just floating out in space. You're only likable or unlikable in the minds of other people. You know, I can't say, oh, I'm the most likable person. It doesn't matter. Your perception of whether I'm likable matters. That's all that matters. And there could be me and you and one other person standing together, and that third person may have a completely different perception of my likability. So your likability, my likability, the likability of all of our listeners is only relevant in the minds of those they're with, and it's never the same with any two people. Hmm. And it's always fluctuating. So anyway, it's a moving target, but these 12 principles I came up with are really based on on science. They're based on my own experiences, the experiences of others. But I think as we go through them, we'll discover that, wow, you know, some of these just don't make sense to me until we really get into it, and then they'll clear up.
Hmm. Well, let's jump in. Let's go for it. And you know, I like IVA. I have them kind of, you know, laid out in simplistic format. There's,
right.
You know, you don't have to go through a huge, you know, reading for everything and kind of learning stuff. It's precise.
Brilliant.
It's very
cut
down to very clear little bursts here. So
your
first
you.
One talks about, you know, we like people who like us.
And doesn't, now that's one that just makes sense. You know, I mean, that's one of the more common knowledge things. When you like someone, there's something known as the law of psychological reciprocity that kicks in. When you like someone, they're morally obligated, not that they will always abide by their moral obligations, but when you like someone, they are going to like you back. Now, again, none of these principles are true all of the time, none of them. But for the most part, when you like someone, they are going to like you back. But here's the trick with that, or with any of them. Your goal and my goal is, how can we let people know we like them? Now, I've told you many times, Darlene, I like you. I like your show. I compliment you about things every time we talk because I truly do like you. Mm-hmm. I like being around you. I like how I feel about me when I'm with you. So the quest is, how can you let people know you like them? Now, Darlene, you and I are kind of unique in that neither of us have a problem going up to a complete stranger, giving them a hug and saying, mm-hmm. I like you. And a lot of us out there, you know, we're not so comfortable with that. So other ways to let people know we like them is just to compliment them sincerely, you know, about them, something about them that we, you know, it's a way of complimenting smaller parts of them all along the way. You know, was it in MASH, remember Frank Burns in MASH?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember his name, but in MASH, you know, he was bemoaning to a Hot Lips. He said, my wife tricked me into marrying her. She told me she liked me. And I thought, oh, my goodness. And you remember being in high school and in college when, you know, a boy would say to you, Darlene, I really like you. I mean, oh, my goodness, that was the thing. That I guess I like him back, too.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes we just don't do that enough. So that's the first law of likability is, you know, let people know you like them. And you can do it in a thank you note. You can do it in a conversation. Now, but keep in mind, too, with all of the laws of likability, the opposite is also true.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like somebody, there's about 100% chance they're not going to like you, because word will get back to them, or they'll feel that you're just not, you just don't like them. And I guarantee you, if you don't like somebody, they are not going to like you back. And that's the way it works.
And now, it's true. I can see that happening because, you know, I'm sure there's, you know, it's that, I don't know, polarity or magnetic, you know, attraction. And you're all on the same frequency in a sense that you are going to be drawn to those that do like you and vice versa. And, you know, and also, you know, with the whole invention of Facebook and Twitter and
all
these social networking things, because it's like now you have the option to actually say, hey, I like that.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? The thumbs up, I mean. So,
yeah,
how many times have you given somebody thumbs down? We don't do that. It's like, no, I'm not going to give them thumbs down. But I do like you. That's amazing. I was at my the eye doctor last week, and as I walked out of the examining room, he was walking in with a second patient, and I opened the door back again real fast as he was setting the other patient down, and I said, Dr. T, I just want you to know I really like you. I like your company. Every time I come over here, I just enjoy you. Thank you. And he just lit up. He didn't know what to say, particularly since it was said in the presence of one of his other, you know, patients. And then as I was leaving, the receptionist said, Bob, that was one of the sweetest things, and I meant it. But, you know, I wonder what he thought about that after he left, or what the receptionist thought about that. You know, it's not something that happens every day. And even though it's a, you know, kind of an emotional thing, you can say, I don't care who you're with, a customer, you know, a parent, a child, a teacher, everybody appreciates knowing that you like them, if you like them. And here's another quick thing. I know we have a lot to cover, but you don't have to like everything about somebody. You just need to let them know you like one thing about them. I like the way you handled that situation. I like that you got back to me this quick. I like the photograph you have on Facebook. Those are all little ways of letting people know you like them.
Oh, that's perfect. So, you know, and I know your second one talks a lot about you like the people that, you know, that are like us in general.
Right.
It
sounds the same, but we like people who are like us, which is completely different. You know, I like people that, and we all do, I tend to gravitate towards people that are kind of my age. You know, I gravitate towards people that have the same interests I do. But also, I'm repelled by people who have interests that are diametrically opposed to mine. I'll give you a couple of examples, and there's reasons we're told not to talk about politics or not to talk about religion. Because, you know, you look at Republicans and Democrats, for example. If you have an avid Republican and an avid Democrat, they are just not going to get along. They're gonna find reasons why they should not, move towards each other. So here's my suggestion along the lines of finding common ground. There's two ways of doing it to find what we have in common. The first thing is, and most people do this, they just put it out there in conversations. My name is Bob. I used to be a fireman. I grew up in St. Louis. I live in Hawaii. You know, I have ADD, blah, 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 blah. And they're just hoping that one of those little hooks is going to grab somebody, and the person listening is going to go, oh, yeah, I have ADD too, or oh, yeah, I've been to Hawaii too, or whatever the case is. The other thing we can do is ask and listen. Where are you from? What do you do? What are some of your hobbies? Who's your favorite baseball team? And, you know, and that's interesting as well. The problem with that is if we do too much of that, we can be seen as an interrogator. You know, I actually had somebody, because I'm one of those people, I ask way too many questions. You know, they said, let me guess what you do for a living. You're an interrogator. No, that's the police department. And then eventually we just decided to agree upon that I was an inquisitioner for the church in a past life. But nonetheless, you know, the more quickly we can find common ground with people, the better. Now here's my suggestion. If you discover when you're going through this little, you know, this dance with people where you're asking questions and listening and sharing, that you have certain things in common, jump on that. Attach yourself to that. You know, if your kids go to the same grade school, that's the topic of conversation. That will bring you closer together. If you discover that they belong to a religious group that you are completely against, let it go. You're not going to marry this person. This is not a long-term, you know, just let it go. Move on to something where you can focus on something that you have in common.
That's great advice. Well, that's really great advice, because you can't just dwell on the things that, you know, are going to actually push you away from one another, but yet you
right.
want to hold on to those things that
right.
keep you connected. I like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I like that a lot. You know, your third one talks about, you know, people that make you feel safe and welcome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talk about that for a minute.
Now, isn't this a passive one, really? This is not an active one where I'm going to tell you I like you, I'm going to look for common ground. And again, when we look at this continuum of likability, you know, on one end, we like people who make us feel safe and welcome, and we don't like people who we feel threatened by. You know, and we avoid those people. I know when I'm in certain neighborhoods where I don't feel comfortable because people are approaching me, and they're approaching me, you know, angrily, or they're approaching me in a manner that makes me uncomfortable, I kind of walk around the street. You know, and we don't have to feel physically threatened by people in order to not like them or avoid them. We can feel emotionally threatened by people. You know, I know oftentimes, and Darlene, because, you know, you're the queen of networking, I know for a fact you have been to, you know, hundreds of networking events, most of which you've been responsible for putting on. And I'm sure you see men and women over there talking, and you see an individual walk up to that group, and nobody in that group opens their body language up, smiles, and invites them in. They're just standing there. They don't feel welcomed. When the reality is, any one of those people in that small group could have just smiled, said, come on in, what's your name, blah, blah, blah. And when we do that, when we're the person that invites people in, oh, my goodness, we are all of a sudden the most likable person in the room, because we took someone from an uncomfortable place, which was a feeling of unwelcomeness, and welcomed them in, brought them into the fold. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing is, and this is unfortunate, there's a lot of men out there that are big guys. They're, you know, 6'8". They're big guys. And just because of their size, and they don't realize this oftentimes, they make people feel unsafe and uncomfortable just because of their size. It's no fault of their own. So if you happen to be a really big guy out there, I encourage you to be aware of that. And you have to smile bigger. You have to be more open. You have to do things to make sure people don't feel threatened around you, particularly with women, guys. I mean, it's just be aware of that. We love to feel safe. We love to feel welcome. And we love the people that make us, you know, put us in that environment.
I would assume that this kind of relates a lot to corporate America as well, because, you know, when I used to, now I've been out, now I'm celebrating 8 years being a business owner, so I'm really, you know, excited about that. But when I was back in corporate America, you know, the open door policy, you know, my staff was allowed to come in and share anything. I mean, I really did encourage them, you know, to come up and talk openly with me if things are going on. And, you know, I wanted them to feel that type of connection and that safety factor, and being totally open and honest about what's going on with them in their position and their career. And, you know, I think that has a lot to do with corporate America resists doing that sometimes, just for the fact that they think that, you know, they don't need to, you know, have that open door. But
right.
I believe that they need to have that more often.
Think oftentimes about receptionists when you call, and the receptionist either makes you feel welcome or doesn't. And from that point on, you have a perception of the entire company. If they make you feel welcome, you know, you're like, wow, this is a great organization. If they don't, because they're just business-like, business, and gatekeepers, we're not letting anybody in. And it's more of an attitude than a behavior. You immediately are like, why would I want to work with this company? I mean, why would I want to do that? And in your case, when you have that open door policy that you have, I'll bet you that paid enormous dividends, Darlene, many of which you never saw, in that people were sharing things with you that if you didn't make them feel welcome, they would have never brought to your attention, which would have caused you huge problems down the line, only because they didn't feel safe sharing things with you.
You know, it's funny that you should say that, Bob, but it was, you know, I had more loyalty with my staff, with, you know, our customers, with people in general, just because of that, because they felt safe and that they knew they could trust anything that they shared with me wouldn't go any further, right, or be handled appropriately. But, you know, I want to shift gears for a minute and talk about those people that really elevate our mood, that lift us up and that, you know, inspire us and make us feel good.
Number four on our list, right? We like people who elevate our mood. And again, the opposite is true. We don't like people who pull us down and into the depths of depression. You know, there are certain people, I remember when I was in high school, the first book I had to read in high school was Dante's Inferno. Now imagine making a little freshman read this, you know, Italian poetry by Dante. And, you know, Dante's Inferno is about Dante's experience in hell. And in about chapter two or three of this this work by Dante, he describes this sign over the gates of hell as he's about to enter. And the sign says, "Abandon all hope, ye who enter here." And I often think, how many people do I confront every day that when I'm with them, it's like, abandon all hope. There's nothing positive that's going to come out of my time with this person. And, you know, regardless, it's their responsibility. You know, think about it. When you're with someone, you're either going to feel better about yourself, you're going to feel neutral, or you're going to feel worse about yourself. And if you and me and all of our listeners can make it a point that every single person we communicate with, whether we do it verbally, over the phone, and email, if we lift them up even a little, we are enhancing their ability to feel better about us. Now here's, again, you can take anything too far. If, you know, if you're just in a, you know, you're just a regular mood and I'm in this, I just want $1 million, well, that's inappropriate because my level of elevating is way beyond where you are currently. So you have to be very careful when you elevate somebody's mood. You have to pay attention to where they are and incrementally move them up. And oftentimes, Darlene, we can do it with something as simple as a smile, a compliment. They're so easy to do. But my quest here and what I'm trying to share with people is under no circumstances have people leave your presence feeling worse about themselves than they do now. By the way, this is, and I wish I would have brought this up early on, the key to likability is this. You cannot make people like you. No matter how hard you try, you can't do it. But what you can do is you can focus your attention in helping people like themselves when they're in your presence. That's what likability is about. It's how do you help people like themselves when they're with you? Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of those folks are going to like you back. So all of these things are based on helping people like themselves better. And elevating the mood is probably one of the simplest, you know, whenever you go to a comedy club, you feel better. It's like, wow, I was going to kill myself before this. Now I feel better about me, you know. And there's other people that after you get off the phone, you're like, you know, where's the rope? This is horrible. So, anyhow.
You know, what I want to mention here is if you are, you know, really riding that emotional, you know, when people accomplish a lot of great things, okay, and I see accomplishments all around us. If someone, you know, wrote a book, I think that's a huge accomplishment. If somebody's lost weight, what a great accomplishment. You bought your first house, or it's a great car, or whatever it is.
Right.
I see everything as a great accomplishment, and I want people to step into that role and really appreciate that. The problem is that, you know, let's say somebody just got this great promotion at work, and you're right, if they don't take the temperature first of a new person that they're coming around, if they enter a room and the person next to them just lost their job,
mm-hmm.
it's probably not the best time to share you've got a great promotion, right?
Yeah,
exactly. And so you have to be so sensitive to the other person and where they're at to match their level, because you'll blow them completely out of the water.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. And then you become... And you become a negative person in their life. So, again, with all of these laws, you can take every one of them too far. And if you do, then all of a sudden it becomes a negative. Like, we like people who like us. If I followed you around all day going, Darlene, I like you, I really like you, I would go from being a likable guy to a stalker. You know, if I was looking for common ground, what would you call me? You don't want to overdo any of these. And that's a very good point you brought up, Darlene. Thank you.
Well, you know, there's so many things that you've created with this. I love this because it's like it's simple things, but yet, you know, we have to really be aware. And I think what you're doing is increasing their attention span with the things that some people may practice without even knowing that they're doing these things.
Right.
And yet we can also fine tune that because, you know, I know it's easy for me to come out and share some of the things that I've been working on, and yet the other people aren't quite at that level. And we almost kind of, they bring me down a little bit to their level, and I bring them up a little bit to where I'm at so that we match.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of makes a big difference. But,
Go ahead. Well, during any part of a day, and depending who you're with, the opposite is happening. You know, people are bringing you up to their level, and they're coming down to yours. And it just depends who you're with, where you are emotionally at that time, and it's a dance all day long. But you brought up such a great point, Darlene. It's about being aware. Oftentimes we walk away going, I feel good about that, but we never stop and go, why? What just happened in this conversation that makes me feel better about me? What did that person have to do with me feeling better about me? We don't consciously, and that's what this whole program on likability is about. We're going to focus on exactly what's happening so you can now consciously look at these things and say, I get it, I can do those things. And they're not manipulative. Oh, my God. If you want to manipulate somebody, well, use these techniques and manipulate them. But you've got to imagine if your focus is on helping people like themselves, genuinely feeling better about themselves, manipulate me all day long. I mean, do it all day long. I don't care because I feel good about me. It's one of the most selfless things. The benefit is, of course, is that when they return that feeling to you, that's where you get all the benefit.
Absolutely. So. You know, you also talk on, you know, in your number 5 talks about having frequent contact and staying connected.
Something that oftentimes doesn't make sense to folks. Now, again, frequent contact is an anomaly in that it's not a behavior. It just, do you happen to be around somebody or not? And it's actually known as the propinquity effect. I love that word. There's like a couple of words in the English language I love to say, propinquity. It just makes you sound smart. It rolls off the tongue. It's just a great word. Propinquity. And what the propinquity effect, it has to do with nearness. You know, nearness in family, nearness in proximity, nearness in time, nearness in similarities. And there was a place called the Westgate Student Apartment at MIT. And back in 1950, they had all the students, you know, who were in this two-story building. And they found that the person that lived closest to the mailboxes and closest to the first floor entrance had the most friends. And the only reason was they were closer to these people. They saw people as they got their mail. Everybody had to go past them to get to their apartment because they were the first. And the person at the far end of the upstairs, who was as far away from anybody, they had the fewest friends. And we know that we generally like the people we're closest to. Now, and again, this isn't necessarily, it's more of an opportunity of liking than liking. And what I mean by that is if you look at the people in your neighborhood that you generally like the most, that you're going to invite over for a barbecue, they're generally the people within one or two houses of your home. When you get out 10, 15, 30 houses, you don't know those people because you're not near them. So, again, how does this apply to work, to business? The propinquity effect would tell me that if I were calling on a customer, I would want to be near that customer. I would want to run into that customer. I would want to speak where those customers are attending meetings. I would want to write papers or have articles that this customer reads. I would want them to see me, my name, my videos, my articles, my books as frequently as possible. And in doing so, you're giving them the opportunity to like you. And that's an interesting one, isn't it? Because it's not really something that we would normally think of, oh, yeah, I'm near that person. I really like them. It's an opportunity for liking. And if you look at the opposite, you know, there's people that live in Wisconsin I've never seen. I mean, they could be one of the sweetest people in the world. I'll never see them. I'll never have an opportunity to see them. And only because I'm not near them will I not like them. And when I say not like, I don't mean dislike. I just mean I won't have the opportunity to like them.
That's, you know, you don't really think about these things, but they make a ton of sense, especially in, you know, when I relate that to what's going on in my network, in my day-to-day routine,
right.
And, you know, thinking about, am I staying connected, you know, to those folks enough? And, you know, it's the communications that I think are really important. If you can't physically be connected, you know, can you reach out to them, you know, online? Can you pick up the phone? You know, can you find other ways of making that connection and kind of being together?
And isn't this one of the greatest reasons to have an autoresponder program on your email system?
Oh, absolutely.
To write blogs and have your people, you know, read your blogs. If you just,
absolutely.
It's just
to approach more people in the masses, you know,
right.
Even when people write and publish a book,
right.
You know, they're still staying connected by having that book accessible to more people and where they can spread that and pass it on.
Right.
And I mean, look at what we're doing here. You're out in Maui, you know, I'm in St. Louis.
During a blizzard right now.
During a blizzard.
right. The biggest blizzard of the year and maybe decade, we'll find out soon enough.
Yeah, it's like Stephen King novel out there.
Right. And that's never a good thing, by the way, never.
No, it's like The Shining.
right. Oh, that's amazing.
Well, let's talk about collaboration. That's probably one of my favorite things. And
you know,
I adore collaboration because it makes so much sense for people to share and support and partner. And you know, what's your ideas on that?
And there's a reason you like collaboration. And let's look at it with respect to liking. And I think one of the best analogies is you look at two grade school baseball teams, you know, little T-ball teams. You have these eighth graders on the Tigers and then the eighth graders on the Bears, and the Tigers hate the Bears. The Bears hate the Tigers. But the Tiger players all like the other Tiger players. The Bear players all like the other Bear players because we're fighting for a common cause. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, as much as you think the players don't like each other from opposing teams, all you have to do is look in the stands and, oh, my God, the parents, are you kidding me? They're out there keying other parents' cars only because the other parent belongs to the Tiger team. So how does this relate to everything we do? Let's start with children. Rather than telling your child to go out and cut the grass are just cutting the grass because they didn't do it. Do it together. When we collaborate, when we work together, you know, the other thing it does is it offers that propinquity effect. It gives us contact when we collaborate. We like people more when we're fighting for a common cause. You know, you find some of the strongest lifelong relationships with men and women who fight and battle together, that go through caisson together. They are lifelong friends. They've been through a traumatizing experience, and they survived it together. And so the goal is, with your customers, how can I collaborate? In lieu of doing it for my customer or having my customer do this, how can I work with them? I know, without knowing it, when I was with a train company, there was a customer in Monroe, Georgia, who I had sold some heat pumps to. And he wasn't really sure how to install the heat pumps, even though, you know, he was an air conditioning guy. The heat pumps were new. It was a little different. So I went out to Monroe, Georgia, and spent the day, and we kind of learned together how to do the installations together. And because we spent that time together, and that was not my job as a salesperson, and as a matter of fact, I was discouraged from doing that. And it was not his job to have me come on board to do that, but we became great friends because we collaborated together. And, you know, Darlene, I think the message for all of our listeners is any time there's an opportunity to collaborate in lieu of just doing it because you can do it so much faster or have somebody else do it because it's more convenient, if you can collaborate, collaborate. There's just an enormous bonding that takes place when we do that.
That's
number six.
Yeah,
well,
and
we've
we've done a lot here. We've gone through six of our. We're halfway there,
time?
You know, we're almost to the end of our show. But it's like I really like how we're able to just flow right into, you know, one to another. And I like how you're giving some examples and stories, because this reinforces, you know, the basics of, you know, the laws of likability that you've created. And you know, your number seven talks about showing respect to yourself, you know, and to, you know, other people, because
yeah,
it's a mutual thing.
I want to just give you the simplest of stories that will make sense here. When we were growing Summers Communication, we were actively looking for people to work our telephones that could handle our customers and deal with them. And my wife and I went to a restaurant in Atlanta, a little bitty restaurant, for lunch. And there was a 19-year-old woman that was walking in the restaurant with us, and we approached the door together. She held the door open, smiled, and said, no, please, after you. We walked in, turned around, and my wife and I looked at each other, and we nodded our head, and we said, how would you like to come to work for Summers Communication? Based strictly on this woman holding the door open for us. That was it. And, Darlene, I have to tell you, it was one of the best moves we ever made. Polite people, you know, and our parents have told us this our whole life, say please, say thank you. You know, that is showing your self-respect. It's showing other people respect, just respect. It's not being subservient. It's just being respectful. People that say please, people that say thank you, people that show self-respect and respect to others, they are eminently hireable. They are going to be phenomenal, and we automatically like them.
That's
based
perfect.
On nothing more than saying thank you. So number seven is show respect. That's it. Be polite. That's it. It's simple. It's a matter of just doing it.
Mm-hmm. That's
yeah.
Perfect. And you're right. And you have to show that type of, you know, mutual respect.
Right.
I think is just so powerful. You know, your number eight here, we like beautiful people.
Yeah.
There's, you know, there's some things about this that...
Yeah.
I see beauty in everybody, and
right.
I'm sure a lot of folks do that as well. So tell me more about what you're referring to here.
Let me start by telling you there is absolutely nothing politically correct about number eight. Nothing. Nothing. If I could throw it out of there, I would, because a likable guy or a likable girl would never say something like that, because there are people in this world that are not necessarily beautiful. But here's the sad truth, or the good truth. It is what it is. People who are beautiful, and I literally mean physically beautiful, who are symmetrical, and that's how we as a culture, not just all cultures throughout all history, see beauty as symmetry. We treat beautiful people differently. We always have. Now, we have what we have, and here's what I know from beauty. I'm not the best-looking guy in the world. I'm the likability guy, but I'm certainly not the best-looking guy in the world. But here's the deal with beauty. All of us can enhance our beauty. All of us can take a shower, wear nice clothes. All of us can smile. All of us can walk with confidence. All of us can be polite, courteous people. All of those things enhance our physical beauty. All of them do. I think Mark Twain said it best when he said, clothes make the man. Naked people don't have a lot of respect in this world. So we just need to do what we can to enhance what we have. Now, believe me, there's nobody that would rather that wasn't the case because, you know, living here on Maui, I run around in flip-flops and shorts, but I know that if I have to dress up if I want to attract people and be seen as somebody that is attractive to other people. And I don't just mean sexually attractive. I just mean somebody that's attractive. And, you know, you have to agree that when you see somebody that has a nice haircut, they look good, they smell good, we are drawn to them. We like them. Now, again, I don't mean like, you know, it's not the same level of like. It's just we tend to move towards them in lieu of away from them. So as much as I'd like to get this one out of there, it is what it is. We like beautiful people, and the goal here is we need to enhance the way we look when we're around other people. It's just the way it is. It's not fair. It's just the way it is.
You know, there's something I'm going to add here because it just,
please.
You know, there's also something to be said about a beautiful heart, even though you
Absolutely.
Can't see it. You can't, you know, really
right.
describe that. But, you know, when someone's got a big heart, that I mean, that's beautiful. And when they're generous and they're, you know, they're kind and they're, you know, caring. So it's not so much the appearance so much as it is, you know, that part of their personality.
Absolutely.
That, you know, sometimes you just can't help. You're like, oh, my gosh, they're just so, you know, passionate. Or they've got compassion. Maybe that's where I'm thinking.
And how many times have we used the word, what a beautiful person, when we're not talking physically?
Right.
But it's the word we use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I find it interesting when we hire people and you go, we really like that person. Well, why do we use the word like? Why do we use the word beautiful with some people when we don't literally mean beautiful physically, but we mean beautiful because they're just beautiful people?
And you know, you're talking also about the whole part of, you know, they make us feel, you know, that we associate with the good feelings. And that's number
right.
10, is that we want to be drawn to those people that, you know, we associate with good
right.
feelings.
And would you mind if I put 9, 10, 11, and 12 kind of together, just went
sure.
through those? Because
sure.
I know we're getting close to the end of our time here. Number 9 is we like people who we associate with good feelings. So the goal there is to be around people when good things happen. And you know, that's kind of an interesting thing. You know, you've heard about the Persian who ran and told the king that the war was going poorly, and the king killed him on the spot. On the other hand, the Persian that ran and told the king the war is going great, you know, he was treated like a king, you know, for the whole time he was there. People like to affiliate with good feelings. I had a friend of mine, one of my best friends in St. Louis from grade school. She and her family came to visit us on Maui. And it happened to be during the 10 rainiest days we have ever had in the history of the Hawaiian Islands. Well, all of a sudden it's rainy, there's nothing to do, you can't go out in the water, blah, blah, blah. I wanted to invite them over to the house, but I didn't want to invite them over when it was going to be raining, but I had no control. So what we did in order to have them have good feelings about, you know, being with the Summers, et cetera, we waited till evening, so they didn't show up until it was after dark. And then we had the tiki lights going outside, and it didn't matter if it was raining with the tiki lights. They're just, you know, they're just nice and kind of fun. And we had a wonderful barbecue under this tin-roof little palapa where the rain was more wonderful than it was a downside. And we had the best time. And all of the negative aspects about raining on Maui, we never saw it. We just saw the good things, good feelings. And it was, you know, actually consciously decided that we were going to try to associate, you know, my time with my friend with good things in lieu of not good things. So, again, in the business world, you want to be affiliated with good things, good news. If you have good news to share with your customer, you want to make sure you're the one that shares that with them and any way you possibly can. Number 10 is we like people who are relevant in our lives. Now, again, this is interesting in that it's very similar to we like the people who we have frequent contact with. If people are not relevant in your lives, they don't really have the opportunity for you to like them. So if someone is relevant in my life, for example, now let's say the painter that's coming to my house to paint, he's now relevant. He's painting my house. He has an opportunity now for me to like him or not. So the goal, again, as an entrepreneur, is you. If you want, you know, a potential customer to like you, you have to find a way to be relevant in their life. Can you save them money? Can you help them earn money? Can you make their life easier? Can you make their life more fun? Are you a good connector of people for them? You need to be relevant. And again, that, number 10, is when you're relevant, you're actually now up at the start gate of likability. Number 11, Darlene, is probably one of my favorite because it's completely contrary to what anybody ever thinks. Most people, particularly people pleasers, believe that when they help somebody, that person is going to like them in return. And that is not true. A people-pleasing behavior is a horrible, horrible behavior. It shows low self-esteem. Most people want to be liked. Everybody wants to be liked, but people-pleasers go about it the wrong way. The rule is we like the people we help, not the people who help us. We like the people we help. Quick example. Almost every day I go down to the beach down here and I go running or walking or whatever the case is. And almost every day there is a car full of folks that are visiting Maui and they want to go to the top of the volcano or they want to go see the blowhole or they want to go surfing. And they'll stop and they'll say, hey, pardon me, sir, pardon me, can you show us how to get to the waterfall or one of the waterfalls? And of course I run up and I go, sure, which one do you want to go to? And they'll tell me. And since I've been to all these different waterfalls, I go, no, the one you really want to go to is Twin Falls. And I start giving them directions, blah, 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 and they're ready to go to Twin Falls. But I don't want them to go yet because I want to tell them everything I can about it. Well, they're trying to drive off, and I want to pull up a lawn chair and tell them all these great things. I know what's happened is I feel good about me because I feel like I'm helping. And remember, we like people who make us feel good about ourselves. So when someone asks for help, and I have the opportunity to help, I feel good about me. They don't necessarily feel good about me because I'm helping them, but they're allowing me to feel good about me because I am helping them. So when we look at the sales world, and this is something that a lot of salespeople don't do, they just say, no, I'm not going to do that. How many times have we been out where a customer said, no, let me get lunch today? And we go, no, I got it. It's a company account, whatever the case is. The best thing you can do is to let your customer buy you lunch. Because now you're letting them feel good about themselves. And if you never, ever let them do anything for you because you're always the one doing your selling, you're destroying your relationship. You're probably not even aware of it, but you're destroying it. So you have to let folks do things for you because it makes them feel good about them. And then finally, number 12, we like people who can laugh at themselves easily. Now, this is an interesting thing as well. And what I mean by this one is if we demonstrate jerk behavior, if we cannot laugh at ourselves, if we're in an embarrassing situation and we do what most people do, which is get angry and upset and steam off, well, that is a very, very, very negative thing, and nobody wants to be around people that do that. Nobody. When you see an embarrassing situation and somebody can laugh at themselves, we gravitate towards that person because we know we feel safe around them. We feel like they don't take themselves too seriously. They have a strong self-esteem. They handled it the way we all hope we handle it. And that's it. So there, and I'm sorry to race through the last four, I know, because of time, but those are the 12 laws of likability. And by the way, you know, if folks haven't written them down, they can certainly, I guess, listen to the show again, but they're also on the bobsummers.com website too, Darlene.
Oh, that's perfect. I was actually just going to ask you about that. But, you know, I wanted to know, because these are perfect things that can be adapted into so many different types of environments.
Absolutely.
And they're almost, you know, universal. So it's not just for, you know, the entrepreneurs, but it's, you know, it applies to, you know, corporate America. It applies to,
teachers,
you know, other
parents.
Relationships that you might have.
Right.
So this is really something that appeals to the masses. It's all over. And so I'm really grateful that you, you know, shared these and you put them together in such an easy way to understand. And,
well, thank you, darling.
Well, I want to ask you, Bob, what is it that we can do in our audience? What can we do to help support you and, you know, to help whatever direction that you're going in with your company, with your business and career?
Well, you're very kind. What I'm trying to do at this point is get this message out there. You know, my customers are associations and corporate clients where, you know, we can go in and talk about these things and change cultures, or to do, you know, really kind of entertaining, you know, keynote addresses at association meetings and whatnot. That is my client. The secondary thing, which is really the thing that gives me the biggest kick, is when I am in different cities, like St. Louis or Chicago, and I'm doing a corporate event, mostly because, you know, I'm paid to be there. The really neat thing is oftentimes I'm invited by churches or Rotary clubs, and I actually search these folks out. And that gives me an opportunity to talk to parents, teachers, grandparents about these same laws on a completely different level, just like you were talking about, Darlene. So, you know, my hope is, and I've found this to be the case, whenever I go to a location to do a corporate engagement or an association thing, there's usually at least one or two other groups that I can talk to at no charge, you know, that I love doing, that is really much more family oriented. So, you know, if I'm going to be in a particular city, you know, I'm going to be there, let me know about your church, let me know about your school. I'd love to come and talk. Or if you know of an association or corporation that could benefit from these kinds of things, then I'd certainly appreciate, you know, you letting me know, and I'd love to come out there and give that presentation. Thank you.
That's perfect. And you are such a talented speaker. And, you know, so for those of you that are listening to our show today or listening to the rebroadcast, you know, make sure you visit, you know, bobsummers.com. Look over his website. Think of who you can connect him with in your network that can benefit from what he's, you know, what his message is, what he's trying to get out to the world. And it all relies on those types of referrals and the communication that's out there, because he has a great message, and I think that's really important to get behind what he's talking about. So, you know, I'm really glad that you took time out of your day to be with us, Bob, and to share your words of wisdom. And, you know, I absolutely adore you. I think that this is just wonderful information to share. And, you know, before we end our show today, is there anything else that you might want to share with our audience?
There is one more thing, and that is, Darlene, I really like you. I really do. Thank you.
Oh, that's cute.
And I mean that. Thank you.
Thank you. And, you know, I can't wait to see you when you come out to St. Louis. And, you know, perhaps I'll be able to see you in Maui one day if I bring the conference out there.
That would be great. That'd be great.
Well, thanks again for being our guest today on the Accomplish Radio Show. And really grateful that you are able to take time out of your day to be here with us.
Thank you, Darlene.
All right. For those of you that are listening to our show today, make sure you check off the Follow Us button. It should be located on your screen. If you visit AccomplishRadio.com, you'll be able to see that there. And, of course, you know, we broadcast our show every morning at 10 a.m. Central, and we'd love for you to start your day with us and listen to some of these amazing people that we bring onto the show, just like Bob Summers, and, you know, get a chance to listen to their secrets of success, their tips and their suggestions, all designed to help you accomplish more in your life. And if you'd like to be considered a guest on our show, simply send in one of our radio show requests. It's also located on our website at accomplishmagazine.com. And again, we're really excited to present you with incredible experts in their field, especially for the month of February. We'll be bringing you guests from all over the world that can talk about their skills and their talents, all related to relationships, both personal and professional. So again, this is Darlene Willman. I'm your host for today's show, wishing you a lifetime of accomplishments. Thanks for joining us.